Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading from the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, October 9th, 2022. This week, we will also begin featuring a few locally written articles from an online news site in San Angelo called San Angelo Live. Community Hispanic Heritage event to be held in Melvin this Saturday by Rosanna Frere, published October 13th. Anyone with family ties to or an interest in the historical community of Melvin, Texas, will want to fly home for the big event slated for this Saturday as the community welcomes Angelo State University's Professor Emeritus Dr. Arnaldo de Leon, who will be the keynote speaker at a once-in-a-lifetime history gathering. Melvin is a community located south of U.S. 87 in McCulloch County, just west of Brady. A Time to Recall, Value, and Reunite with Our Roots event will take place on Saturday, October 15th, the final day of National Hispanic Heritage Month, according to organizers, who add that the event will commemorate the roles that Mexican-descended residents of Melvin played in the development of the area, particularly as it relates to desegregation of schools from the 1930s through the 1950s. According to a news release, Dr. De Leon will share the essence and highlights of La Colonia Mexicana de Melvin, the rise, heyday, and decline of a Mexican-American community in West Texas, a monograph and potential book which chronicles the origins, development, successes, and disappearance of the town of Melvin from the early 1900s to today. De Leon will highlight the uniqueness of this community within the broader socio-political context of Texas during this era, and the families that led its impact on the culture, economy, and education of the times, the release stated. It is a call for those who lived in this town and its environs to remember our history and visionary forefathers who enabled the formation of many local, regional, national, and international influential sons and daughters. The event is organized by the Juanita Patriotica, a community-based organization instrumental in the development of the Melvin community since the 1920s, which now is resurging as a 501c3 nonprofit organization for the benefit of McCulloch counties and nearby environs. According to organizers, Juanita Patriotica's vision includes reforming the plataforma and making it available to the area for things as dances, weddings, family reunions, birthdays, and more. Proceeds from all activities will go toward scholarships for local youth to help them attend college or trade schools and maintenance of the facility. The Plataforma Jimenez is located north of the St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church, 107 Savage Avenue, on the corner of Live Oak and Savage Avenue. A Zoom link has been created for anyone who cannot attend in person. https://tamu.zoom.us/j/9355820797. Bring your mementos. According to the news release, invitees are asked to bring artifacts from this era and share the stories of the challenges and successes of their families and how their personal and professional trajectories were launched from this isolated rural community in West Texas during some of the most difficult times in terms of outright and overt discrimination. Organizers are hoping all attendees will bring along pictures, school yearbooks, annuals, awards, diplomas, news clippings, letter jackets, pep squad regalia, letters, graduation invitations, and are also asked to bring along a table or poster with a stand to showcase their offerings, which will be set up inside the plataforma, with each family given time to share information about their history. This will be an opportunity for Dr. De Leon to identify more information for his research, perhaps for a subsequent book or documentary. Copies of artifacts will be scanned or photographed for historical purposes and or illustrating future works from this event. The event schedule is as follows. 9 to 10 a.m., registration and mingling. 10 to 11 a.m., introductions, recognitions, and business report. 11 to noon, keynote speaker, Dr. Arnaldo De Leon. Noon to 1 p.m., catered lunch by Jacoby's, $15, and ongoing genealogy projects. 1 to 2:30 p.m., family stories and artifact sharing. 2:30 to 3 p.m., closure and looking ahead. History of Melvin and Hispanics. According to the news release, a couple of activities converged to lead up to this event. Firstly, several current and former residents of Melvin and the surrounding farming and ranching area showed an interest in restoring the Plataforma Jimenez and offering it for the benefit of the broader community. The second catalyst was a discovery by Dr. De Leon of a buried file in the West Texas collection at Angelo State University. The file was titled Melvin, Texas Collection, and it highlighted an effort by the rural community to desegregate the Melvin schools during the 1940s. Dr. De Leon said that while similar actions were taking place in large metropolitan areas of the United States, to see such a thing happening in Melvin was unusual and likely one of the very few such efforts in rural Texas at that time. According to the news release, the Texas Constitution of 1876 sanctioned separating blacks and whites in schools, and many school districts across the state separated Mexican children accordingly. Up through 1946 in Melvin, there was a Latin American school for Mexicans in first through eighth grades. Many Hispanic students dropped out after eighth grade. Those who didn't leave school were integrated with white students at the high school. Starting in the early 1940s, Mexican community leaders embarked on a letter-writing campaign to civil rights attorneys and the Texas Department of Education, among others, to address the inequality of education being offered to their children, the news release said. In 1946, sixth and seventh grades were integrated and moved to the main school building that included the high school. In 1948, the fourth and fifth grades were integrated. And by 1948, only the first grade was segregated, but remained at the Latin American school until 1950, when it was moved into a separate building on the campus of the main school. There, students who did well advanced to the high first for another school year before integrating into the integrated second grade in the main Melvin school building, the release stated. Some Mexican first graders were able to advance to the desegregated second grade without spending another year in high first. Dr. De Leon will share the essence and key points of the paper, which is a chronicle of key events and individuals who played important roles in contributing to the economic development of the Melvin area and to the desegregation of the school. The impact of this happening pervades to this day and still resonates among many of the families and their descendants who have made significant contributions to the state, country, and international contexts. Kohl's and Sephora hiring at new location in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published October 8th. New employment opportunities are soon to be available in San Angelo as two new retail establishments are opening and accepting applications. Kohl's is opening at 6105 Sherwood Way, next to Sam's Club, in a new plaza. The Kohl's will also house a Sephora. According to the San Angelo Permits and Inspections Report, the business has a budget of $2,500,000. Multiple jobs, full and part-time, have been listed for the stores, including store manager, associates, supervisors, stock room operators, beauty advisors, and more. Jobs can be found at careers.kohls.com/stores. Interested applicants can also type in San Angelo or their zip code to find jobs in their area. Kohl's has not yet released an opening date for their San Angelo location. According to the company website, Kohl's is a leading omni-channel retailer with more than 1,100 stores in 49 states. They advertise national and exclusive brands, incredible savings, and an easy shopping experience. Kohl's was founded by Polish immigrant Maxwell Kohl in 1927 as a corner grocery store in Wisconsin, according to the company website. It operates 86 stores in Texas, including ones in Abilene and Midland. Sephora is a French company selling beauty products and cosmetics. In addition to individual retail outlets in the United States, the company announced in 2020 that it would begin opening Sephora stores inside Kohl's locations. Some of the first were opened in 2021. San Angelo police officer resigns after arrest, charge of theft, by Rosanna Frere, published October 10th. A San Angelo police officer has resigned following his recent arrest and charge of theft, according to a statement released Monday by Police Chief Frank Carter. Jason Zapata, who was arrested October 4th and charged with shoplifting, resigned Friday, October 7th, according to the release. The San Angelo Police Department is a civil service department and has a set protocol for conducting internal investigations in accordance with state civil service law, Carter wrote in the statement. While the investigation into his conduct was ongoing, if professional standards had sustained the allegations, I intended to terminate Officer Zapata's employment with the San Angelo Police Department. The criminal investigation into the incident, which took place at Walmart, 5501 Sherwood Way, will be sent to the Tom Green County Attorney's Office, the release stated. It is very important to me for the citizens of this community to know that this type of conduct will not be taken lightly and will not be tolerated, Carter said in the release. It is also essential to express that the conduct of one officer should never reflect on the hardworking, professional, and dedicated men and women of the San Angelo Police Department. Those officers do an outstanding job every day, keeping our community safe. Zapata had been employed as an SAPD officer since 2007 at the time of the arrest. He was placed on administrative leave. According to jail records, Zapata was charged with theft of property, $100 to $75, and released on a $500 bond that same day. Three people died after head-on crash on highway curve in Reynolds County, by Laura Gutschke, Abilene Reporter News, published in the San Angelo Standard-Times October 7th. Three people were killed in a head-on crash Thursday, about 10 miles east of here, on U.S. Highway 67, according to a Texas Department of Public Safety news release. An eastbound 2023 four-door car attempting to pass a vehicle on a highway curve struck a westbound 2022 pickup truck at about 10:15 a.m., the release said. Car driver Benjamin Nathaniel Sapp, 24, of Crawley, and passenger Jacob Alexander Gray, 25, of Louisville, were pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace Lane Pinckney. Second car passenger Lindsay Gail Perry Gray, 22, of Louisville, was in stable condition with incapacitating injuries when transported to Shannon Medical Center in San Angelo, DPS said. Pickup driver H.O. Aiken III, 51, of Comanche, was treated and released from the hospital, while his passenger, Sarah Evelyn Brown, 48, of Brownwood, was pronounced dead by a physician, the release said. All five people were wearing seatbelts, DPS said. Officials confident in local election security, by Matthew McDaniel, special to the Standard Times. Tom Green County Elections Administrator Vona Hudson said her team is ready for the upcoming elections, and she is confident in the systems officials have in place to ensure election integrity. "You know, we have been blessed," she said. "We have not had the same problems as some other counties have, where people have quit because of threats, and that's been to our county's benefit for sure. We've heard about other offices receiving a lot of threats and things like that, and we feel very fortunate to not be in that boat." Hudson said the 87th Legislature's Senate Bill 1, which was signed into law September of 2021, mandated several changes, including upgrades to voting equipment that will produce voter-verifiable paper ballots and ensure an auditable trail. Local officials made that possible before the first voting of 2022 was scheduled to take place in January. In December 2021, the county opted to pay roughly $673,000 for Hart InterCivics upgraded Verity 2.5, which includes Verity Touch Rider Duo, Verity Scan, and Verity Central, and 100% of that expense was to be covered through the Secretary of State's office as a funded mandate. While many in Tom Green County voters have used the machines already, Hudson said it will be new to some voters. What happens now is that everyone gets a paper ballot, she said. We converted to a paper-based system where you will still be voting on the machine, but it prints a paper ballot. Just as before, you will get an access code, but now you will also get a sheet of paper and you will walk over to the machine, put in your paper, enter your code, and then make your selections. It will let you review your choices on the machine and then print the ballot, and you make sure it's showing everything correctly, and then you hand it in. And that's the point where it's actually kept. Hudson said the county also is well equipped to help voters keep a close eye on election proceedings, as they were able to add live feeds covering key locations during election counting procedures. We've also had that in place since the first election after SB1, she explained. I was blessed to have my IT person be able to get everything in place, and so we've had the camera feeds showing our central count, which is only activated when we are actually in there performing central count functions. And then there's one in the area where the early voting ballot board works, where we sort the ballots. Hudson said in addition to processing applications to vote, the office is busy keeping track of each mail-in ballot request, which requires some extra time. We're required to keep track of each step of the process, Hudson said. If a person is getting a ballot by mail, we have to track that request. We have to track that we entered them for that ballot, and we have to keep track of whether the ballot came back. Hudson also said several voters have been surprised to find out election officials are not allowed to hand a mail-in ballot to anyone other than the intended eligible voter. If someone comes in and requests a ballot by mail for themselves and their spouse, I can only give the one who came in person a ballot, she explained. I can't give one to anyone else. If someone calls for a mail-in ballot, I have to speak with the actual voter. Hudson said anyone who is unsure of their voter status should check with the office, as there can be unpredictable impediments that would cause a problem come election day. You know, we have folks who have been registered for 40 or 50 years and used a driver's license number on their voter registration forever, she said. Now they're not driving anymore, and they have a new personal ID, so they are submitting forms with the new ID number, which does not match up with the previous information. Hudson said it's best to get things resolved as early as possible. Hudson also encouraged any local residents who have moved into town since the last election to update their current address, enabling them to vote on the City of San Angelo ballot proposition. Spotlight, the Verity voting system. According to information from Austin-based Hart InterCivic, the hybrid Verity Duo system is a touchscreen ballot marking device that creates a paper vote record. Unlike other systems, Verity tabulates votes from human verifiable information rather than black box barcodes or QR codes, and offers several unique security features. External cards, drives, or other devices cannot be inserted by voters into any Hart voting device, nor can executable code be hidden and run from voting system media cards. Verity devices have built-in features to prevent physical tampering, such as keyed locks, tamper-evident seals, and non-standard ports that only allow Hart's proprietary connections. The devices also have non-standard electrical wiring in strategic areas and are equipped with two-factor authentication devices to secure access to critical election management functions. The county offers 2-minute Verity Duo voting machine video link on its elections website at tomgreencountytx.gov /page/ELE.electionshome. As we've mentioned on this program in the past few months, the number of locally written articles in the San Angelo Standard-Times newspaper have been reduced dramatically as they have laid off many of their reporters. We have found another source of San Angelo news, a website called San Angelo Live. Some of the headlines on this site could be construed as clickbait. In other words, they have very provocative headlines to get you to click and read the article. So please bear that in mind as we read some of these stories. Again, published on sanangelolive.com. Business. Well-known Lubbock Carpet Cleaning Company expands to San Angelo. By Matt Trammell, published October 12th. Carpet Tech, a family-owned and operated floor care and emergency restoration company, has moved to San Angelo to serve the entire Concho Valley. Carpet Tech started from humble beginnings and a heart for service. Chet and Melinda Ferries own the West Texas-based company, but originally Carpet Tech was started by Chet's older brother, Chad. When Chad tragically passed away at 23 years old, Chet eventually took over the business and grew Carpet Tech to 6 locations with over 200 employees. Carpet Tech expanded into San Angelo in September 2022 and has just moved into its new facility at 1225 South Oak Street. Cade and Peyton Simmons, longtime Carpet Tech employees, have moved their family to San Angelo, bringing with them the Carpet Tech dedication to hard work and personal service. "We're so excited to become a part of the San Angelo community," Cade said. "They have welcomed us with open arms and allowed us to demonstrate who we are and how we serve." Carpet Tech's IICRC certified technicians use truck-mounted equipment to serve commercial and residential customers. "If you can walk on it, Carpet Tech can clean and restore it," said Cade. Carpet Tech cleans all floor types, including carpet, tile, stone, concrete, and hardwood. "Using a hot water extraction process, we thoroughly clean all surfaces, removing odors, spots, and even germs, providing a clean and healthy home," Cade said. Carpet Tech is open 24/7 and on call for water emergencies that can happen when a pipe bursts in winter, a toilet overflows, or a home appliance leak. Cade says in most cases, Carpet Tech can arrive on site in less than an hour to begin the water cleanup process. "Water emergencies are stressful for the homeowner," he said. "While we have been called out to begin the cleanup process, we see these jobs as an opportunity to show care and compassion, walking a customer through the entire restoration process, including working with their insurance company." Carpet Tech is a company that serves from the heart because it's who they are, not just what they do. Hard work and attention to detail make this company run, but the staff takes time to act on a strong motivation to serve the community. Carpet Tech employees regularly volunteer their time and skills to help those in need in every community they serve, and Cade says they plan to do the same in the Concho Valley. "It's really something to work for a company that does what it says and does everything with the people-first mentality," Cade said. "That's what makes us special, and that's why people trust us." Health. COVID-19 infections remain low in Tom Green County. By Yantis Green, published October 9th. San Angelo health officials Friday released the latest COVID-19 information for Tom Green County, which shows infections and hospitalizations from the virus remain low heading into the flu season. The flu season officially began on October 3, 2022. Below is the weekly COVID report. Total cases over the last 7 days, 144. The Centers for Disease Control is reporting a slight uptick in the number of flu cases in Texas. In a report released on October 7th, compared to the previous week, the percentage of specimens testing positive for influenza reported by hospital laboratories has increased. The percentage of patient visits due to influenza-like illness, ILI, has decreased. One influenza-associated pediatric death was reported. No influenza-associated institutional outbreaks or school closures were reported. As we reported earlier, health officials expect COVID-19 shots to be recommended annually, just like the flu vaccine. Business. Extremely popular department store to move into former Bed Bath & Beyond building, by Matt Trammell, published October 7th. The former Bed Bath & Beyond building will be turned into a home goods store, confirmed last month's building and inspections report. As previously reported, in January 2022, Bed Bath & Beyond permanently closed its doors after being in business in San Angelo for decades. With its departure, it left a large hole in the very popular shopping center on the 4100 block of Sunset Drive. But as things go, new things come in. This time, it would be the extremely popular furniture store Home Goods. Home Goods has a similar concept and is owned by the same company as Marshalls and TJ Maxx. Their main goal is to get their customer design brand furniture for discounted prices. It is unclear at this point when the store will be open, but the store has applied for a $900,000 building permit from the city of San Angelo. Crews so far have completely gutted the inside of the former Bed Bath & Beyond in preparation for the remodel. These next two articles were published originally a few weeks ago, but are still newsworthy. And this first article here exemplifies what I mentioned earlier in terms of the naming of their headlines insofar as clickbait. Politics. Economic developers firebomb City Hall, by Joe Hyde, published September 29th. City Hall was firebombed during the City of San Angelo Development Corporation meeting Wednesday morning, and it's still burning. John Berryu, COSADC's vice chair, took most of the time during the regularly scheduled corporate meeting expressing his frustration with policies, procedures, manpower, and fiduciary decisions at the corporation. Berryu, known for his long Santa Claus white beard and tenacity to serve the community, arrived in San Angelo as a retired intelligence analyst with the U.S. Air Force, who was educated in engineering. He said he applied those skills to open up a long festering wound at City Hall. At issue was the sovereignty of COSADC to perform its mission, but the discussion exposed a long list of grievances and gripes held by some on the board and the corporation staff about how the city management treats the corporation. The meeting began with the resignation of Chris Evatt, who is the chairman, president, and CEO of First Financial Bank in San Angelo. In Evatt's resignation letter, he said that a recently amended city ordinance concerning conflicts of interest disqualifies him from continuing his two-year term. He had served 12 months on the COSADC board as of this meeting. The new law states that a member of a city board cannot serve if that board member is also involved with a non-city entity that receives revenue from the city. Evatt also serves on the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce Board, and the chamber has a contract with the city of managing the Destination Marketing Organization and for operating the chamber's economic development office. After reading his resignation letter, Evatt got up and left the room. Then COSADC Board Chairman Mike Puello called for the first agenda item that was presented by Berryu. In Berryu's opening remarks, he questioned the legal construct of the COSADC's founding document and COSADC's current business relationship with the city of San Angelo itself. Berryu asked longtime COSADC director Guy Andrews, who recently resigned over city management issues, to speak at the meeting. COSADC manages the revenue from the half-cent sales tax the city of San Angelo collects. This portion of the sales tax collected within the city limits is exclusively earmarked for economic development projects. In addition to financing hundreds of millions of dollars in development projects, such as the Hickory Pipeline Project, the corporation pays for a staff of four and contracts with the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce to perform cooperative economic development services. Andrews said throughout his tenure, he felt uncomfortable with the contract for services that COSADC has with the city of San Angelo, but never felt that he had enough support during his tenure to challenge the arrangement. Berryu alleged that the city manager's office had assumed authority over what items were to be placed on the COSADC board's agenda. Then Andrews added that he was disallowed from having meetings with his counterparts at the economic development at the chamber unless the meetings included Mayor Brenda Gunter or city manager's staff. Andrews also noted that the city ordered what he thought was an audit of the Chamber of Commerce and expressed his discomfort with that. It was later learned that the audit was for only the portion of the chamber's budget that the city funded. Yet Andrews alleged he was chastised by the city manager's staff for not being a team player when he expressed his concerns. "I didn't think I could tolerate another 30 days. I was fed up with the whole process and disingenuous way the city staff tried to dominate the economic development process," Andrews said. Andrews was paid $125,000 annually as the director of COSADC. Berryu alleged that although each board member takes an oath to run the $10 million annual revenue corporation, our hands are tied because our staff has been harnessed by city staff. Our staff is serving a two-headed beast. "I question the authority of city management under this contract to assert things that has not been reviewed, discussed, deliberated upon, and ultimately voted on with a motion by city council," he continued. Towards the end of his presentation, Berryu finally told the board the top reason for his concerns about the legal arrangement and control the city manager's office exerts on the corporation. "We need to have the provisions that will allow the corporation to act as an independent corporation to a degree, because in our type of ED corporation, things have historically gotten out of hand in other cities, where the half-cent sales tax funds end up being a piggy bank for pet projects that are politically motivated rather than approached sensibly with an expected return on the dollar invested by the taxpayer," Berryu said. "We do try to vet that, and that is the purpose of this board." Assistant City Manager Michael Dane, who ultimately oversees COSADC's operations and, with Andrew's departure, is currently the acting COSADC director, countered that the board's responsibility is to fund projects and what projects it funds are subject to a political process. So to characterize that activity as funding pet projects or a piggy bank for pet projects, all of those projects see due process in which political figures are involved, Dane countered. Andrews offered two recent examples where due process was not applied to projects funded by COSADC. He listed the Chadburn Streetscape Project and a West Texas Water Partnership Project. He said in both instances, the COSADC board was presented with marching orders to fund both projects without deliberation from the board. Andrews said one former board president challenged the authority of city staff to dictate projects to COSADC, and he was told, "If you challenge it, you can be removed from the board." "I believe the corporation has become a cash cow that the city has attempted to control," Andrews said. Assistant City Attorney Brandon Dyson sparred with Berryu somewhat throughout his presentation, questioning and clarifying some of Berryu's assumptions. Berryu's general complaint was that provisions that give the city manager's staff control over COSADC are in conflict with state law. Berryu said COSADC, as a corporation, is a sovereign entity. Andrews said after the meeting that one of the last straws to convince him to resign was a conflict with city staff over personnel issues. During the meeting, he said that the contract with the city forced COSADC to not only pay the salaries of corporation workers, himself and three others, but to also finance the payroll of city employees in the finance department that were not necessarily needed or required by our staff or this board. At the same time, he said, he was not given the resources to plan an adequate succession plan to prepare someone else to take the reins after he retired. He said the person selected to be Andrew's assistant was forced to take a two-level downgrade in pay and likely had no other alternatives when he transferred to COSADC. Andrews didn't name the person in his succession plan, but the room knew that was Nolan Sosa, who was also at the meeting. Board member Joe Spano, who is the regional municipal director for Republic Services, stepped in and asked the board to cease discussion because he believed others on the board were blindsided by Berryu's presentation. He said he was given no notification that the first agenda item involved the rancor he was witnessing. He recommended the board reconvene at a later date to resolve the conflict. "Right now it's time to move on," he said. City manager Daniel Valenzuela addressed the board and accused Berryu of attempting to interpret the law when he was not an attorney. "Sovereignty. You brought up sovereignty. Everything you do runs through city council," Valenzuela said. Spano's request for cooler heads to prevail was not heeded, although the discussion of the corporation's contract with the city eventually ended. A subsequent agenda item blew up the meeting again. Dane presented comparative manning of various development corporations around the state located in comparable-sized cities. His presentation slides noted that COSADC had a budget of about $2.9 million and employed 5.25 economic development professionals. Other corporations had much larger budgets and comparatively smaller staffs. Dane also folded the two chamber-employed ED professionals into his number of employees that, for some, seemingly overstated the headcount of COSADC. Dane's presentation infuriated COSADC staffer Nolan Sosa, who took the opportunity to blast his boss. "As a matter of public record, it is important that I clarify that this is not an apples-to-apples comparison, and I am not certain who prepared it. The total revenue line," ignoring the misspelling of the word revenue for a moment, "we have $2.8 million in revenue. That is not the total revenue for the San Angelo Economic Development Corporation that is reported to the Texas Comptroller. And while I can appreciate that this number is the number that we are honing in on, it is not an accurate apples-to-apples comparison. The revenue number is above $10 million per year. I think we should frame this more appropriately because these discussions center around bodies as we deemed this morning. But they're not bodies. They are livelihoods. They are people. I think it is irresponsible to frame it any other way. It is important that we remember, for a matter of public record, that we do remember that we bring in over $10 million per year in revenue." He noted the balance of the $10 million finances projects, from water projects to affordable housing to city parks, that enhance the vitality of the city. He said COSADC is a key organization that manages those projects, oftentimes in partnership with other city departments. "To disregard this in any analysis is reckless, it is irresponsible, and I apologize for just a moment for breaking the quorum. This analysis is nothing short of offensive," he concluded. Berryu responded to Sosa's remarks with, "Michael, the engineer in me is coming out, and I think we forgot to put the landing gear on the airplane." Politics. Old election foes may reunite for hate crime trial. By Joe Hyde, published September 19th. Two election foes may have the opportunity to reunite in the courtroom. According to the September 20th Tom Green County Commissioner's Court agenda, outgoing County Court Law No. 2 Judge Penny Roberts wants to retire early. In order to do so, the winner of the March 1st Republican primary, Andrew Graves, will be sworn in on November 1st if commissioners approve. Graves fought Assistant County Attorney Leland Lacey for the Republican nomination for the County Court at Law No. 2 bench and narrowly won 50.59% to 49.41%. The contest was very close, as Graves edged Lacey by only 125 votes. Graves' 5,395 to Lacey's 5,270 votes. Because there is no Democratic nominee for the position, the Republican can be assumed the winner of the upcoming November 8th election. Almost as significant, Judge Roberts will step down just before jury selection begins for the hate crime trial of Evan Berryhill. Assistant County Attorney Lacey charged Berryhill with assault, physical contact, committed because of bias, prejudice, after progressive leftist online provocateurs led by two men who provoked Barry Hill in a dark parking lot in front of Barry Hill's own apartment, targeted the Tom Green County Attorney's Office, demanding Barry Hill be arrested for a hate crime. Barry Hill is seen on video calling the men effing effets after being continuously provoked by the two. The indictment alleges that Barry Hill touched one of the men during the confrontation. The Class C misdemeanor was upgraded to a Class B misdemeanor because of the hate crime. And since Barry Hill was charged with a Class B misdemeanor, she was booked in the Tom Green County Detention Facility and released after posting a $1,000 bond. Lesser offenses are only fines and require no jail booking or jail photo. The posting of Barry Hill's booking photo led to a new wave of coordinated online harassment and cyberbullying attacks on herself personally and on her small downtown boutique business called the Texas Angels Boutique. When the original videos were published online in mid-April, Barry Hill and her business were viciously attacked throughout a coordinated online harassment campaign led by TikTok influencer Dinesh Norshervan, who is known as that Danish guy on social media platforms. Barry Hill was threatened with rape several times in voicemails, emails, and text messages. The news of the arrest and jail photo that happened 4 months later, after what was a thorough and lengthy criminal investigation by Lacey's team, provided more context to further stalk and harass Barry Hill. Norshervan also viciously attacked myself and San Angelo Live for refusing to join in on the online harassment campaign of a local San Angelo business owner by having us publicize the video without context. In other media markets, Norshervan has been successful in convincing local media reporters to publish his point of view as part of his modus operandi to gloat about the consequences of his target's actions after his initial video attacks. Since our series of stories about the victim of the coordinated online cyberbullying have been published, the first one titled The Execution of Evan Barry Hill, some readers chipped in to help pay for her attorney. Defense attorney Chantel McKellop was hired August 11th to represent Barry Hill. Judge Graves will preside over the trial where old election foe Lacey will prosecute. McKellop will be Barry Hill's defense attorney. Jury selection begins November 14th. This is likely the first ever hate crime charge ever filed in Tom Green County. And now sports. San Angelo's Central football team taking momentum into Odessa High Showdown by Charles Bryce, published October 12th. It was a strong start in District 2-6A for the San Angelo Central High School football team last week, and now the Bobcats will try to keep it up at home against Odessa High on Friday night. Central improved to 4-2 overall and 1-0 in district after a 28-25 decision on the road against Midland High last week. Odessa, 3-3, 0-1, is looking to bounce back from a 38-7 loss from crosstown rival Odessa Permian. Kickoff for the Bobcats-Broncos showdown is scheduled for 7 p.m. Friday at San Angelo Stadium with radio coverage on KIXY 94.7 FM. The Bobcats managed to hold off the Bulldogs with a strong defensive effort and an opportunistic offense. "Overall, I'm just proud of our team, really," Central head coach Kevin Crane said. "Anytime you go on the road and you can win a ball game in District 2-6A, you've done something good. Looking at the film, I think defensively we played better. Obviously, their style of offense, the flex bone, is different. But we did some good things. We kind of bent a little bit, but we didn't break, and so I was proud of that. We didn't really give up any big plays, and we tackled pretty good." Central quarterback Tyler Hill had 6 carries for 176 yards, and he was 7 of 11 passing for 174 yards and a pair of touchdown strikes to Jacob English, 39 yards, and Kevon Rice, 22 yards. "Offensively, we only got 6 possessions total in the whole game," Crane said. "If you don't count the 2 kneel downs at the end of the game, we only ran 38 offensive plays. We scored on 4 out of 6 possessions, which was good. Our very first possession, we didn't score, and to start the third quarter, we didn't score. But at least in the third quarter, we held the ball from there, and we were able to use quite a bit of the clock. We obviously would rather have scored, but holding the ball in the rain and not letting them have the ball back was kind of the second best thing there. The biggest plays for the Bobcats were the 2 TD passes by Hill and some really long runs, as usual, by the central QB. Defensively, senior middle linebacker Darius Floyd registered 21 tackles, including 17 solos by the former running back. "He's really coming into his own," Crane said. "Obviously, this is his first year to play linebacker, but man, he's gotten better and better each week. You turn on the film and you see some of the things that he's doing. He's able to fight off blocks and scrape over the top and finish on the ball carrier. It's really impressive. He's a big part of our defense and a big part of our team, and I'm really proud of the way that he's continuing to get better throughout the course of the year." Floyd was a hard-nosed running back for the Bobcats last year, but he's really come into his own at linebacker. "We played him at running back kind of out of necessity for a while, just because we needed him," the Bobcats coach said. "And this year, we made the switch. We felt like we had to have him at middle linebacker this year, and when we brought the idea up to him, he was all on board. He was excited about it. He leads our team by far in tackles for the year. At the start of the year, he kind of made some rookie mistakes. If you think about, he's almost like a sophomore linebacker in experience because he hasn't gotten to play it that much. But he's picked it up and has gotten better and is doing a real good job on our defense." And now the Bobcats will try to stay unblemished in district with the win against an Odessa High team that put a thumping on Central last year, 41-14 at Ratliff Stadium. The Broncos have already matched their win total from last year. "They're a good football team. There's no doubt about it," Crane said. "You turn on the film and watch them, and they're doing some really good things. Obviously, Ivan Carrion, 6'6", 195-pounder, is a really big target and a really good receiver for them. He's a load. Offensively, they're pretty multiple. A spread style of offense, running the ball and throwing the ball, they're doing a good job in both departments. They're scoring some points, and they look pretty good on offense. Defensively, they've done some good things this year as well. They're fairly multiple on their defensive fronts. The Bobcats definitely don't want a repeat of the 2021 debacle against the Broncos." Coach Dusty Ortiz there has done a really good job, Crane said. "Last year, we went over there and played them at Ratliff, and man, they got the best of us. We really took it on the chin. We're excited to play at home this week, and so we've got to be ready to meet the challenge." Lakeview Chiefs face another stiff challenge against Brownwood. By Charles Bryce, published October 11th. It's a longtime rivalry that's been on hiatus for 15 years. The Lakeview High School football team will host traditional powerhouse Brownwood in a District 2-4A contest at 7 p.m. Thursday at San Angelo Stadium. This will be the first meeting between the Chiefs and Lions since 2007. Lakeview and Brownwood first started playing each other way back in 1958. Radio coverage will be on KWFR 101.9 FM. Lakeview, 3-4 overall, 0-1 in district, opened league play with a 33-0 shutout loss on the road against Andrews last Friday. Brownwood, 5-2, 1-0, rolled to a 41-10 at home against Big Spring and the Lions' 2-4A opener. The Lions' only losses this season were against Class 5A Abilene Wiley in the season opener and Stephenville, the number one team in 4A Division I. The Chiefs will try to get their offense back on track after getting shut out in the last two games. "We started off pretty good," Lakeview head coach Hector Guevara said of last week's loss against Andrews. "We moved the ball down the field and we had a chance to score a touchdown, but it turned out being an interception. Defensively, we held our own a little bit, and we moved the ball down again. It's just one of those deals where we didn't sustain the drives and we didn't finish out. It kind of let the air out of our team. They played hard throughout the game. We had our chances early in the game to definitely make it a different ball game. The Chiefs have three games left in the regular season, starting with Thursday's matchup with Brownwood. Guevara says his players have maintained a positive attitude through the ups and downs in 2022. It's simple. Believe in yourself and believe in the team, Guevara said of his message to the Chiefs. Finish out strong every game because you never know what can happen. Guevara knows how big a challenge this is for the Chiefs, who haven't been at full strength in a number of weeks due to injuries to key players. Looking at film and on paper, yeah, they're probably going to be the toughest team we've faced all year, Guevara said of the Lions. They challenge you in the run game and in the passing game. Defensively, they're big, and they pursue well to the ball. Brownwood definitely has a lot of tradition. We just tell the kids to step up to the challenge. We can only take care of what we control, and that's what we need to do. Number three, Angelo State, hopes to keep trucking with road victory at Western New Mexico. By Charles Bryce, published October 13th. Five teams are standing in the way of a perfect regular season for the number three Angelo State University football team, beginning with Saturday's road game against a much-improved Western New Mexico squad. ASU improved to 6-0 overall and 4-0 in the Lone Star Conference after knocking off Eastern New Mexico 28-9 at home last week. I thought defensively we played a great football game all night, ASU head coach Jeff Gersh said. We held them to 3 points and only gave up a field goal there before halftime. The other points, obviously, were the interception return for a touchdown. I'm really happy with where we're at defensively. Offensively, if you go back and look at the film, I wasn't too happy on Saturday, just kind of watching it. But coming back and looking at the film, we did some good things, too. We've just got to sustain drives and finish drives. But nonetheless, we're 6-0, and I'm proud of the way they played throughout the game. We've just got to clean some things up and hopefully get better each week. Western New Mexico, 3-3 and 2-2, almost pulled off an upset on the road against number 22 Texas A&M Kingsville. The Mustangs led 17-14 at the half, and that score held up until the Javelinas scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter to escape with a 21-17 decision. Kickoff is scheduled for 1 p.m. Saturday in Silver City, New Mexico. Radio listeners can tune in to KWFR 101.9 FM. The Rams know of the danger of looking past Western New Mexico this week and ahead to a highly anticipated showdown at home against Kingsville on October 22nd. Who do we play next week? Gersh said with a grin. We've got to take care of Western New Mexico. They are a very talented football team. They've got a lot of new players on their team. Out of the two deep on defense, 20 of them are new kids, and there's a lot of transfers in that mix. They're very good football players, and I think they're getting better and better as the weeks go on as well. They're getting more confident. They beat Midwestern State 2 weeks ago. If we dare look past this and into Kingsville, we are going to get in trouble fast. That's where things come up and bite you a little bit. ASU rolled to a 62-3 blowout last year against Western New Mexico in San Angelo, but Gersh says not to read anything into that. They're not the same team from last year, and we're not the same team from last year, the Rams coach said. Our kids need to understand that as well. We're different in our philosophies and what we're trying to do. The common ground is we want to run the football and we want to do play action and do all the things we want to do on offense and then defensively be very physical. And we've continued to do that from year to year. But years change and teams change. Nothing from last year has any bearing to do with this, and especially with Western New Mexico.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.